This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, we'll hear from food sustainability expert Arlen Wasserman. He was in Kalamazoo last week to speak at an event sponsored by the Kalamazoo Valley Community College Foundation. He'll tell us how food impacts health, the environment, and the economy. And the Center for Michigan will tell us what issues they have found the citizens of the state want addressed by lawmakers and the administration. But first, higher education funding in Michigan. 2 weeks ago, Western Michigan University President John Dunn was asked on this program about efforts to make college more affordable. He responded that it would be a different world if states like Michigan provided more funding for higher education.
The funding for higher education for Western Michigan University that we get from the state is the same that we were getting in 1996. Well, you know, somewhere out there, we have imposed a new tax. It's just a very selective tax on a very few people and those that are accessing higher education.
A new study shows that most states are still lagging behind the funding that they provided colleges and universities before the recession began in 2008. The Center on Budget and Policy Priorities report found that Michigan has cut funding for higher education deeper than 37 other states. Karen Holcomb-Merrill is the policy director for the Michigan League for Public Policy. The research and advocacy organization helped release the report on higher education funding. Karen Holcomb-Merrill, thank you very much for being with us.
I'm happy to be with you.
So how does Michigan stack up with other states when it comes to spending on higher education?
Well, as you mentioned, this new national report that's out takes a look at higher education spending across the country, you know, the amount of money that we're spending on colleges and universities. And unfortunately, Michigan doesn't fare very well in the report compared to other states, in particular when we take a look at the cuts to per student spending here in Michigan. We're looking at a time frame from about 2008 to 2014. Over that time period, Michigan cut per student spending by 28%. And that happens to be deeper cuts than more than 37 other states. So while many states found themselves having to make cuts, the ones that were made here in Michigan were particularly deep.
What does that mean for students and families who are trying to go to college right now?
Well, one of the direct impacts that we've seen is dramatically increasing tuition here in Michigan. And this report looks at increases in tuition as well as cuts in state spending because there is a direct linkage there. And what the study shows is that the average tuition increase, again, from 2008 to 2014, here in Michigan, on average, was about $2,000, and that was a 21% increase. So the increase in tuition here in Michigan during that time period is higher than 34 other states. So there's a, you know, there's a direct connection there. We've made deep cuts to higher education. Tuition has increased. And what that means in terms of students and families here in Michigan is that higher education has become much less affordable. And we have also seen a shifting of the burden, if you will, more onto the backs of students and families. Here in Michigan, we're one of only six states where there's a 2-to-1 ratio, and students and their families are responsible for 2 times the amount that the state allocation now is. And this is something that's shifted over the last 20 to 25 years. And as a result, there are many students that can't get a 4-year degree. And as we also know, there are many students graduating with a tremendous amount of debt.
Does Michigan's economy help explain why it has lagged behind other states in higher education spending, that the recession hit harder in Michigan because of its reliance on the auto industry?
Certainly, the recession seems to have hit Michigan harder than most states. There's no doubt about that. You know, for many years, Michigan's unemployment rate was the highest in the country. You know, we know that we lost close to 1 million jobs here in Michigan. We know that the median income fell. As a result of all of those things, the amount of money that was available in the state budget fell. And as was the case in many states during this time, but arguably it hit Michigan harder. So there was less money to spend on anything that the state budget funds. And that does include colleges and universities. However, I would say at that same time, in 2011, there were budget policy decisions or tax decisions, really, that were made that also impacted on the amount of money that was available in our state budget to fund things such as higher education. And you might recall in 2011, shortly after Governor Snyder came into office, he proposed and ultimately the legislature passed a very significant change to the tax system here in Michigan, cutting taxes on businesses by 83% and shifting some of those taxes on to individuals. So as a result of that, since those changes have taken effect, there has been less money available in Michigan to fund higher education, K-12, revenue sharing, roads, all kinds of things. So it's both a combination, I think, of the impact of the recession, but also decisions that have been made here in Michigan by our policymakers.
There's a proposed increase for higher education in this year's state budget. How much, if any, would that help Michigan close the gap?
Well, it's a start. And one of the things that this report also talks about is that most states have started to reinvest in higher education, and that includes Michigan as well. Looking over the last fiscal year, there was about a $200 increase per student here in Michigan. However, Michigan still lagged behind 32 other states as everyone starts to reinvest. So that is starting to happen. The governor's budget for this year that was proposed has a 6% increase in it. So far, the legislature generally agreed with that proposal. But it's going to take some really significant reinvestment to make up for all of the disinvestment that has occurred. So while we applaud movement in this direction, we think it needs to be a much more aggressive reinvestment in higher education than what we're seeing right now. And I would also applaud the governor in his proposal, in his proposed budget. He has a tuition restraint of 3.2%. So for colleges and universities that keep their tuition increases below 3.2% for the next year, they'll be eligible for some additional funding. So that incentive is important. You know, colleges and universities, I think, struggle to try to figure out how to close that gap if, you know, they're getting less state funding, but they're also being told to keep tuition down. So that's a challenge.
So what are the short and long-term impacts, possible impacts, on Michigan's economy as a result of funding of higher education?
Well, I think a lot of times people think right now, if I'm not a college student, if I don't have someone in college, if I don't work for a college or university, this doesn't affect me. And that's absolutely not the case. You know, we are in, as you know, a changing economy, a growing economy, a global economy, all of which requires many, many jobs to have college education. And so not only is this an issue about whether or not a student can afford to go to college, it's an issue about, are we going to have a well-educated workforce here in Michigan, which is essential to growing our economy. We know that a key factor for businesses in determining where they'll locate, where they'll stay, is whether or not they have a well-educated workforce that they can draw upon to fill the jobs that they have. So, you know, if we don't invest more in higher education, if we don't make higher education more affordable and more accessible, we are not going to have the well-educated workforce that we need going down the road.
But to go back to that question about the state's finances, does this become sort of a chicken and egg almost, that you need money to invest in higher education? At the same time, in order to generate revenue, you need high-skilled workers who are in good jobs, making good wages and paying relatively high amounts in taxes. I mean, I guess, you know, does that cycle have to get started in order for you to be able to appropriately fund higher education in the first place?
Well, we clearly need more revenue here in Michigan. You know, what's happened is, you know, we refer to our budget as a pie, and the pieces of the pie keep getting slimmer and slimmer and slimmer because the pie is so much smaller. What we really need to do is we need to grow the pie here in Michigan, and there are a number of different ways to do that. Michigan doesn't have a very progressive tax structure. We have a flat income tax. There are, you know, just a handful of states that still have a flat income tax. Most have moved to a progressive structure. When you do that, you raise more revenue for your state. You know, we could move, as many states have, to a sales tax on services. Back in the day, we spent most of our money on goods and not on services, and that's what we taxed through the sales tax here in Michigan. So we need to have a tax structure that's modernized, that reflects our economy, and one that's more progressive so that it's not hurting the families that are just struggling to get by. And the other piece that's really relevant right now, as you know, is that there are lawmakers suggesting that we should roll back our income tax rate right now. And that would result in less money available for spending this year and down the road for many years. And so we think that's very short-sighted and that we shouldn't be talking about rolling back the income tax, that we should be talking about reinvesting in higher education, in infrastructure, in our communities. And we need to have smart, sound tax policy.
Karen Holcomb-Merrill, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Karen Holcomb-Merrill is Policy Director of the Michigan League for Public Policy. This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Food sustainability expert Arlen Wasserman says how food is grown, processed, and delivered is a good place to focus right now if someone wants to influence public policy. He says food is a major driver in increased health care costs. Wasserman says the food industry is also a major contributor of greenhouse gases. Wasserman was in Kalamazoo last week to deliver the keynote address at the Kalamazoo Valley Community College Foundation's Education for Opportunities Dinner. Before his speech, we sat down at the Radisson Hotel in downtown Kalamazoo. Arlen Wasserman, thank you for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
Your talk here is titled Changing Tastes, Health, Sustainability, Food, and the Future of the Culinary Profession. If someone wants to get into the food business in some way, perhaps food preparation, perhaps working for a company like Kellogg, what is their future?
Well, it's really an unexpectedly wonderful time to be in the food industry. And if you think about being in any industry, it's actually been an unexpectedly wonderful time since 2007. Since the economic downturn, the food sector has continued to create jobs in the U.S. Every quarter, more people are working in food service, in food production, in food manufacturing. And the food sector is also an industry where you can get in with relatively modest training and education compared to many other fields. So a growing field with modest educational requirements is a great job opportunity. The challenge, of course, is that what we eat is really important to our health and the health of our planet. So having better training not just in how to grow food or chop food or cook food, but how to choose the food you give to other people is really the next challenge for us.
You were at one time a vice president of sustainability at Sodexo. How much of this comes down to corporate responsibility, and how much should we, the public, trust corporations to do the right thing when it comes to food?
Well, the short answer is we are trusting corporations to serve us better food. Every year, with a few statistical and significant variations, we've been spending a larger share of our food dollars on meals or recipes designed by culinary professionals and choosing to buy fewer ingredients to assemble and cook at home. So we've made that choice.
We're eating out more.
Yeah.
We're not only eating out more.
We're eating out more. We're eating at work and school more. We are picking up food that's prepared to eat at home. Most people don't think about it, but there is a recipe behind a rotisserie chicken. We are no longer buying a whole chicken and deciding how much salt to put in ourselves or whether that chicken is free-range, antibiotic-free, or fed organic feed. We're just buying a chicken to eat. And all of those other decisions were made by a culinary professional in the business they work at. What I think is really interesting is that while very large companies, and this isn't just true in the food industry, have a hard time changing what they do. They may add things on, but when even a even if your business isn't growing that fast and selling something like sugar-sweetened beverages, it's hard to turn away from $20 or $30 billion in sales. But the fastest-growing companies are the new ones who have high-quality ingredients, more fruits and vegetables, more whole grains, less meat, less sugar, more authenticity as the basis for what they do. And whether it's the emergence of things like cold-pressed juices or all the companies that have followed Chipotle and scratch cooking in their own restaurants, the fastest growth is in the type of food that's going to be healthier for us and healthier for the planet.
I asked that question in part because the former CEO of Kellogg, Carlos Gutierrez, was here recently, and he was very critical of a lot of the federal agencies regulating food. Now, you've worked on the corporate side, but you've also advised government agencies. I'm wondering what sort of balance you see, what sort of role should there be in the federal government or even state governments, perhaps, putting a regulatory leash on?
I think regulation and the soft power of government is critical. More people at all income. We're spending more of our dollars on fresh fruits and vegetables, especially in the lower income households than ever before. That's the soft power of the White House. I truly believe that Mrs. Obama has been a powerful force in telling everyone they need to feed their kids more fruits and vegetables, even when you're living on modest means. Mandatory calorie labeling. We might not get into all of the nutritional requirements, but it makes people think twice before they eat a sandwich, knowing that if they eat that sandwich or that quesadilla or that slice of pizza, they better not eat again that day because it's 1,000 calories or more. I piloted calorie labeling at Sodexo before it was required in our corporate dining hall, and it actually changed the decisions the companies made when the executives realized how unhealthy some of the food was, that a sandwich could be more than half their day's calories and 100% of their sodium and fat. On the other hand, there's another big soft power piece, which is that the federal government is a huge buyer of food and food service for the military and for government agencies, and they could change the industry by changing the requirements of what goes in food. Walmart is doing that by requiring less sodium in some canned products and boxed products, and that'll cause all canned products and boxed products to have less sodium. You're not going to make two different, you're not going to run two factories. The federal government could do much more.
You mentioned that we're eating more pre-prepared food, and if that's not going to change, let's say that things level off if we're fortunate.
Yeah.
Should we be looking closely at how that food gets prepared, what sort of processes it goes through, and how it gets ultimately through that process to the plate in front of us?
I think that we need to decide to do business with companies that are very forthcoming about all of those things. I don't think that we should do our own research every time we eat and every time we pull something off the grocery store shelf. We wouldn't have time for much else. But we should trust companies that don't just have a healthy option or are philanthropic, but that actually print their whole ingredient list and the origins of the products. There are a lot of companies that do that. A lot of companies that do that on their label now, they're the faster-growing companies, smaller but faster-growing companies. I think that the rise of the culinary professional and our desire to have good choices made, but made on our behalf by others who have the time and the technical training and do this as their job, is where we're headed as a country. So I think that we're on a trajectory of not cooking more at home. But we're also starting to vote with our dollars and say that big companies that have complex ingredient lists and treat food as if it's a set of components or commodities rather than food that came from specific places grown in specific ways, I think we're shifting to wanting to know more as shoppers, even as we're spending more as shoppers.
And what's your impression of how that is working on the other side? You mentioned that smaller companies seem to be doing better, but are the large corporations recognizing this and are they acting on it?
This is a question of change in the food industry, and here's what I see. Big food companies realize the need to change. They just don't know how to do it, and they're afraid to do it, because even though business isn't great, it could be worse. And even though the problems of climate change and water scarcity and obesity and diabetes are getting worse, senior executives may retire before they get worse on their watch. They can kick the can down the road a little bit. So it's hard to just turn to your workforce and you say, you know what, we're done selling cola. We're out of the business. But what's happening is the market for their products is shrinking. Soda consumption in the U.S. is just plummeting. People are drinking other beverages and eating other foods. And the smarter companies are now buying their smaller competitors who are doing healthier and more sustainable products. And doing so, they're diversifying their product line. But I think equally importantly, they're bringing in smart business people who will then infiltrate the company and start making better changes. Hopefully it will go faster than waiting for other people to retire. But I think that the change is now happening by starting a great company, having it do really well, and then having it be bought by a bigger company that can bring a better menu or better product to scale, and realize that the less healthy part of their business is in decline, and that the better ideas are happening outside of the corporate walls. So acquisition is the change model there.
Arlen Wasserman, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure.
Arlen Wasserman is a food sustainability expert and the founder of Changing Tastes. He spoke last week while he was in Kalamazoo to deliver the keynote address at the Kalamazoo Valley Community College Foundation's Education for Opportunities Dinner. This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. The Center for Michigan has been taking the temperature of Michigan voters this election year. The Think and Do Tank has been trying to figure out what people want from their elected representatives before ballots are cast in August and again in November. The center released Michigan Speaks, the Citizens' Agenda for the 2014 elections yesterday. Here to talk about it is the Center for Michigan's president and CEO, John Bebo, and outreach coordinator, Dwayne Barnes. Gentlemen, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure to be back, Gordon.
How did you put this report together?
All right, so Center for Michigan, like you said, we're a think and do tank, nonpartisan, nonprofit. And what we do public engagement campaigns, and this one we did especially, you know, to test the waters, as you were saying. So this is what we did. We go around the state, and we spoke to over 5,500 participants in over 160 community conversation meetings in nearly 100 towns and cities. So we've made our way around the state. And what we do is we sit down with organizations and individuals and ask them, you know, what are their priorities for statewide public policy? And we get a lot of interesting remarks. We go and we have an opportunity where they can cast their vote through clickers, and then we ask for their feedback as well. So we get information two ways. So after we get all the information and all of the conversations, and they range from late September 2013 up until the first week of August in 2014, after we get all the information, we analyze it, and then we come up with this report. We talked to 3,700 people in community conversations, 550 on our online conversation, and we did a 1,200-person phone poll. So that's how we got to the 5,500 participants total.
In a nutshell, what would you say Michigan residents want?
There was four big takeaways. The first, and I think the one that's just on the top of mind, is Michigan voters that took our conversation, they wanted to see the roads fixed. It's teed up in Lansing right now, and the intriguing part about it is participants said they were interested or they would pay more in taxes to see the roads fixed. It was 71% in our conversations and about 56% on the phone polls. So it was a majority of the participants said they were willing to pay more in taxes for roads. That's the first one. Next was a big push in education. We wanted to see improvement in pre-K through 12 student performance, high school graduation rates, and career readiness and job training. That leads us to our next point, which is college affordability, which was a very raw nerve among state residents. They were concerned about, you know, the cost of obtaining a college education and then the employment prospects when you're done. So that was a very big raw nerve, you know, for our participants. Also, you know, fighting poverty. People across all race, income, and worker groups see it as a roadblock to the success of our state. But, you know, citizens had few concrete answers. So, you know, we know that poverty is an issue, you know, regardless of where you stand on the socioeconomic ladder. But, you know, the results were you know, kind of hard to come by. So that will give us, you know, a lot of interesting conversations on the campaign trail. Next would be on tax policy. And this was very intriguing as well. There is no clear mandate for our leaders to cut taxes or to raise taxes. We asked the question, do you want to see taxes raised? Do you want to see them cut or stay the same? And it's roughly a third each. So there's some kind of roadblock there, you know, on tax policy. So, you know, we want to see things done differently, but we don't want to, you know, necessarily cut or raise any taxes to see it done.
Well, Bridge, which is the online news service of the Center for Michigan, has a couple of stories up already on this. And in one of them, the longtime political analyst of Michigan, Bill Ballinger, is quoted as saying that people want something for nothing. Is that being a little too harsh here on the voters who said that they want some improvements in areas, but at the same time don't want to see any tax increases?
Well, Gordon, I don't know if that's being too harsh. I think it's somewhat realistic with the public's high expectations. That's what made the opinion, the majority opinion, that people are willing to pay more for roads really stand out. We think that really reemphasizes the urgency that people feel about fixing the roads and getting it done, and getting it done now. That was a point that it raised the most eyebrows for us in Lansing yesterday as we briefed a wide range of state decision makers. And we hope that introduces further urgency into the negotiations over how to fix roads. Otherwise, what people are saying is you got to make do with what you have, just like we do at our kitchen tables when we're balancing the checkbook. And we want you to continue to strive to do things differently. Look, for example, at the issue of education. Just a little bit east of your station, Gordon, Bridge Magazine recently profiled a really heroic effort on the part of the communities of Marshall and Albion to combine their high schools. They did it for financial reasons. Their financial picture has improved a great deal since they've done so. And they did it by combining two very different cultures of students. And it's not easy, but it's the kind of innovation that I think people are talking about when they say we want improvement, but we don't have more money to give you to make it happen.
So since you did find that people are willing to pay for better roads, would that lead one to conclude that they're talking about some sort of very dedicated revenue increase in the gas tax that goes entirely to infrastructure, that sort of thing?
When we do these campaigns, we cover about two dozen different issues, and we do it in about 2 hours. So we're not able to get down to budget boilerplate level of depth on exactly what people want. We try to focus on the big picture themes of what people want and then leave it to the experts, the elected officials, to work out the details. There is a sense, though, in this report that people want a real fix, a real solution. They don't want a Band-Aid on the roads. They want the problem fixed.
So now that you have this survey put together, we start to move into an election season. What sort of things happen next on the behalf of the Center for Michigan?
All right, so what's next is we're interested in doing a lot of community engagement, candidate engagement events around the report to, you know, give legs to the report to say, okay, you know, this is what we found. But we want to ensure that it gets to the leaders. We want to make sure that, you know, if the Michigan residents want more, that we can kind of help them, you know, put their voices together so they can get more. We want to help them hold their elected officials accountable. They're going to be coming around knocking on doors, you know, looking for votes. So we're going to say, well, you know, we want to get you guys to answer some of these questions that we have in our state and, you know, try to find some ways to do that. So we'll be around through the campaign season, throughout the fall, you know, allowing for people to take this report and make it their own as well.
Gentlemen, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Dwayne Barnes is Outreach Coordinator for the Center for Michigan. We also heard from the organization's President and CEO, John Bebo. The Center for Michigan released Michigan Speaks, the Citizens' Agenda for the 2014 elections yesterday. You can find links with more information and longer versions of the interviews on West Southwest at our website, wmuk.org. This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.